Hello, this is Wendy Bauer, reading to you from the Decatur Herald and Review, dated October 5th, 2015. We will begin today's reading with the article, No Reminders Could Cause License Plate Sticker Shock, an article from Decatur by Ryan Voiles, a staff writer. It's now up to drivers to know when to purchase a new license plate sticker. As the state's budget impasse continues, Secretary of State Jesse White announced last week that his office would no longer send notification to drivers about their upcoming sticker notifications. The move is expected to save White's office $450,000 a month in postage costs. Law enforcement officials will be handling the situation in their own ways. Macon County Sheriff Thomas Schneider said he has already told his officers to give drivers a 30-day courtesy if their stickers are expired. "We'll at least give drivers some courtesy if the officer feels it's necessary," he said. "You don't police for profit. You police to help people." Schneider's decision came down shortly after LaSalle County Sheriff Tom Templeton, 2015 Illinois Sheriff's Association president, asked local and state law enforcement to use their discretion and issue warnings rather than citations for expired license plate stickers. Law enforcement officers have vast discretion in issuing traffic and equipment citations, he said. Here is an opportunity to assist our citizens rather than penalize them for something beyond their control. While it will be up to Decatur Police Department officers to issue citations, Lieutenant Ed Hurst said they don't expect to have any sort of courtesy plan in place. "Nothing will really change for us," he said. "In general, it's up to the registered driver to make sure they have their stickers up to date." Hurst suggested drivers register for electronic notices at the Secretary of State's website, cyberdriveillinois.com. which will continue to send email notifications to drivers throughout the unresolved budget situation. Mailed notices to drivers are expected to resume when the state passes a budget. From Allison Petty, Herald and Review staff writer, "Council to Consider Hotel Project Deal." In Decatur. The Decatur City Council will consider a redevelopment agreement to facilitate the construction of a Hampton Inn on the city's east side. The council would vote only to receive and file the agreement tonight, with the final action slated for October 19th. Under the agreement, the city would return to developer Steve Horve half of the hotel motel tax it collects in the hotel's first 5 years. The incentive is meant to help reimburse Horve for the cost of construction, estimated to be more than $7 million. The developer was considering a different community. "We feel very fortunate that he decided on our community," City Manager Tim Gleason said. "We felt strong enough that there was a need in that part of Decatur." In other business, the council will consider changing city code to allow for the sale of alcohol within 100 feet of a church or school in the downtown area. The change would not affect the rest of the city, where the distance must be at least 500 feet. Gleason said there is interest in establishing a microbrewery downtown, which would require the code change. He said city officials recognize that the nature of the downtown area is unique. The October 19th meeting is scheduled to include consideration of rezoning on the city's north side to make way for an Aldi store. Residents who live near the proposed site, near the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51, have objected passionately, citing concerns about traffic, safety, and their property values. Aldi is seeking to close its store on Pershing Road and open a new, larger store in the highly visible location. Because of the volume of interested residents, that meeting will be held in the Decatur Civic Center Theater, rather than council chambers, Gleason said. He is slated to present major priorities to the council soon, either at a special meeting later this month or the first meeting in November. "I'm excited," he said. "I'm ready to go and present this to the council." And a sidebar to the article, if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. today, October 5th, 2015, in the council chambers, third floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. The council packet and agenda are available at decaturill.gov under the, quote, council meetings tab. Tony Reed, Herald and Review staff writer, writes, "Garden has roots to the past," from Decatur. In the sweet garden of childhood memory, Craig Warwick holds on to the taste of his salad days. "I remember going out as a kid and getting the sweet peas out of the garden," Warwick said. "I'd just split open that pod and, oh, nature's candy." The Decatur man is now too busy working and raising a family to cultivate a vegetable garden of his own, but if you can't go home again, you can always take a walk in someone else's garden. And so Warwick and his 5-year-old son Gabriel took the opportunity of a sunny and warm fall Sunday afternoon to visit the Heirloom Garden Open House at Rock Springs Conservation Area. This garden's memories go back a lot further, recreating the plants and look of a circa 1860s vegetable plot next to the Homestead Prairie Farm. Dad looked on with a smile as the volunteer master gardeners who work the soil introduced his son to such vegetable exotica as okra, a taste similar to green tomatoes when fried, and which stand more than 6 feet tall. "I love to bring him out here so he can appreciate nature," Warwick said, "and he does pay attention. He wants to know." There's much to learn in the Heirloom Garden and an Heirloom Herb Garden nearby. More than 20 varieties of vegetables alone are cultivated without the aid of chemicals and using heirloom seeds free of modern hybridization, all grown just the way our frontier ancestors grew them. Yields are surprisingly good, with some 380 pounds of produce having been pulled out of the garden this season. It's all donated to Decatur area food pantries, as well as feeding animals at Scoville Zoo, and the master gardeners have mastered some interesting non-chemical ways to grow their harvest by fending off ravenous wild beasts like deer. The heritage garden is surrounded by a small fence topped with tall poles that have multiple strings stretched between them. From the strings hang oddities like gourds and corn cobs with feathers to give them wings. The feathers make everything twist and turn in the breeze. Master gardener Clarence Josephson says all that movement is enough to confuse and spook the deer. "I think the deer end up thinking the fence is as high as the strings," Josephson said, "and the deer have not bothered the garden in the last 2 years. It does seem to work." And Tony Reed, staff writer, writes the article, "Decatur Man Takes Motorized Bikes to Next Level," from Decatur. "When it comes to ranking bravery, there are the merely courageous, and then there are those who enjoy accelerating to more than 60 miles per hour on a motorized bicycle. Saying it's fun doesn't even begin to describe it," says James Irvin, a Decatur entrepreneur and fast bike lover who runs a thriving performance business out of his backyard workshop. "It puts a grin on your face." If that kind of fearless performance also flips your kickstand, the 36-year-old Irvin is the mechanical guru who can put your pedal to the metal, as it were. He builds motorized bicycles that range from mild, 25 miles per hour everyday transport, to racing models designed for the track. As with everything else mankind has ever managed to strap an engine onto, motorized bikes have developed their own racing hierarchy, and Irvin sits tall in the saddle as one of its high priests. "This is a first in the industry, a 5cc, cubic centimeter, combustion chamber," says Irvin, holding up a shiny, modified two-stroke engine cylinder head he's reworked with his magic. A cylinder head with a 5cc capacity is a big deal, performance-wise, in the world of fast bikes. You can marry that with an Irwin modified carburation system, an Irwin balanced crankshaft, an Irwin tuned exhaust, and on for a power plant that will smoke your rivals down at the track. "I can build them from extremely mild to insanely ridiculous modified," he says of his engines. "I build race engines and ship them to Florida, Texas, California, all over. People know about me because my bikes show up at races and dominate. I go to races in St. Louis, for example, and those guys hate me because they can't touch me. I make them look ridiculous." Irwin doesn't see the point of modestly soft-pedaling his vocabulary or his talents. A semi-truck driver in his day job, who recently survived a nasty collision with a train, he says life is too short to be shy about his bespoke engine tailoring abilities. He works alongside two younger friends, Jeremy Flynn, 25, and Dylan Ostramsky, 18, who are learning from the master. Both men vouch for his wicked ways with a wrench and the euphoria that flows from it. "Oh, man, it's a rush," said Flynn, who just got back from a quick demonstration of one of the racing Velociraptor bikes. He explains the feeling of speed on a bicycle is intense, and there is also that sensation of a childhood dream realized, of finally being zipped along by a bike you don't have to pedal. "It's a bicycle with an engine, man," he adds. "Who wouldn't jump on a bicycle and not have to pedal it to where they need to go?" Irwin says he got into motorized bikes more than 8 years ago after noticing them and writing them off as dumb, but finally succumbing and buying himself one. He soon slipped into a motorized bike addiction and began messing with the stock imported engines sold at various sites online so he could coax even more speed out of them. "Ever since I was a little kid, aged about 10, I've liked working with engines to make them faster," recalls Irvin, "and it's a thrill that never gets old." By his early teens, he was already an expert at making everyday and normally slow mechanically propelled objects get up and boogie, and at age 13 had managed to hot rod a riding lawnmower that could hit 35 miles per hour, mowing his way over to an accelerating love of souped-up bicycles just seemed a kind of natural shortcut. "I've always been the one who makes everything go faster," he says. "I build speed." From Decatur, Emily Steele, staff writer, "Trappers catch attention with Decatur Convention." Even with his whole body weight stepping on the levers, 5-year-old Waylon Hemp couldn't set the coyote trap. But with patience, persistence, and some help from a nearby adult, Waylon managed to set 5 traps, which put a big smile on his face. The Illinois Trappers Association held its annual convention at the Macon County Fairground for the first time this weekend. Vendors from 10 states set up tables to sell traps, bait, and other equipment, and each building was filled with the pungent, musky smell of a variety of animal scents that filled countless bottles. "It's a one-stop shop," said convention coordinator Kent Weil of Springfield. "Anything a trapper needs, he can get at this convention." Illinois is home to about 10,000 licensed trappers who are gearing up for the start of the season in November. The association is just shy of 1,400 members, about half of whom live within a 2-hour drive of Decatur, according to Weil. The convention and membership meeting that was Friday were a chance for them to come together, learn from each other through demonstrations, and recruit people to the trade. "We're a happy-go-lucky bunch," said the association's president, Neil Graves, "but people don't know what to make of us." Graves said there's a lot of history in trapping, and he's proud of that, but the industry has changed a lot in the last 50 years. For most, trapping for fur is not a way to make a living, especially with recent slow sales in the big Chinese and Russian markets. The number one question I hear about trapping is, people still do that? New this year was the focus on children. While the internet has helped make getting into trapping easier, the younger generations aren't getting involved. You still have to have somebody who gets the kids started and gives them that spark, Weil said. We're trying hard to get young people. Kelly Hemp of Champaign watched as her sons practiced for the kids' trap-setting contest in the children's area. Her husband is a trapper, and their children, Wyatt, 7, and Waylon, 5, are following in his footsteps. "They've been going out trapping since he was 1, she said, pointing to Wyatt. The judges and volunteers spent time showing everyone how to set each of the 5 metal traps safely before the contest. "We're trying to teach them the proper way. You never want to put your hand in here," said Judge Scott Klima, pointing to that piece that would trigger the trap to close. When the judges gave the signal, the kids rushed to set their traps. The adults cautioned them to do it right, not just fast, even though none of the traps were strong enough to cause a serious injury. "If there's a trapper and he says he's never been caught by a trap, he's lying," Klima said on several occasions when the traps snapped early. Hemp said trapping teaches her boys patience and a respect for nature. "I prefer this over them sitting on the couch playing video games," Hemp said. "I love that they're into this." Doran Miller of Missouri led a demonstration on castor, a liquid from beaver glands that's used in perfumes and as a food additive. "There's a lot of different things we use that a lot of people don't know," he said. Miller said there are a lot of stereotype about trappers that are untrue. Traps with teeth have been illegal for years, and Miller said new traps are more humane for wildlife. "Today, we're always studying our equipment because we're looking for the best possible outcome," Miller said. The presentation on the newly proposed bobcat trapping regulations was one of the more popular events. Last year, lawmakers removed the 40-year prohibition, and the first season will be in 2016. This came about in part after the Illinois Department of Natural Resources studied the state's bobcat population size, but the state budget crisis has pulled funding for that and reduced the number of conservation officers. "What they're doing with the DNR hurts. There's no money for research," Weil said. And from Decatur, Decatur man accused of repeatedly kicking woman in face. Bobby G. Beck, a 48-year-old Decatur man with a lengthy history of committing violent crimes in Shelby County, entered a not guilty plea Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court to a felony charge of domestic battery, with three domestic battery convictions. The victim told police on September 6 that she was sleeping on an air mattress in an east side house when she was awakened by Bobby kicking her in the face, an affidavit by a Decatur patrol officer said. She told police that Bobby repeatedly kicked her in the face and was angry because their ride had left and he could no longer use her car, the affidavit said. The victim suffered injuries consistent with statements she made to the police. Beck was arrested that day and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on $25,000 bond. He is due back in Circuit Court November 24th for a pretrial hearing. If he does post bond in the case, the conditions of his release prohibit contact with the victim and her residence. Beck was previously convicted of domestic battery in incidents that occurred in Shelby County in 2013, 2014, and 2015, a court document said. Beck, who is listed at 5'9" tall, weighing 235 pounds, in Illinois Department of Corrections records, was released from prison April 14, 2013, after serving 5 years of a 10-year sentence for possession of weapons by a felon. His prior felony convictions were for aggravated criminal sexual assault with a weapon in a 1998 case for which he was sentenced to a 10-year prison term, and aggravated battery, great bodily harm, for which he received a 4-year sentence in a 1993 case. Beck is a registered sex offender for committing the sexual assault on a 17-year-old victim when he was 31. Also from Crime in the Courts by Huey Freeman, Herald and Review staff writer, domestic battery suspect loses bond, remains jailed. A 45-year-old Decatur man is being held in jail without bond after he forfeited the $60,000 bond on which he was originally released for failing to appear in court in his aggravated battery case. About 2 p.m. June 25th, a 69-year-old woman told MacArthur Slaughter Jr. she was going to go to the store without him that day. That caused him to fly into a rage, she later told police. He told her he would kill her and grabbed her by the throat while she was seated on the back porch of her residence, said an affidavit by Decatur patrol officer Eric Havens. Slaughter then struck the victim on the right side of her head twice with a closed fist before shoving her head into a door behind her chair. The victim told police that she became disoriented and might have been knocked out because she did not remember Slaughter leaving her residence. Slaughter, who has 5 prior convictions for violent crimes such as battery or domestic battery, was arrested that day and booked into the Macon County Jail. His bond was set at $60,000. On June 30th, he was arraigned in circuit court on a felony count of aggravated battery of a person 60 years or older and a misdemeanor count of domestic battery. He handed the judge his application for a public defender, which showed he had no money and no ability to pay for an attorney. The judge found him indigent and granted him a public defender. Slaughter, who also goes by the first name MacArthur, posted $6,000 cash bail July 9th. He appeared in court July 15th to enter a not guilty plea. When he failed to appear in court on July 22nd for his preliminary hearing, a warrant was issued for his arrest. On September 4th, a judge ruled that Slaughter's posted bond would be forfeited to the state. He was subsequently taken into custody. Slaughter is being held in jail pending his preliminary hearing October 14th. In circuit court. And by Chris Lisvardi, a staff writer for the Herald and Review, harvesting rainwater reaps anti-pollution benefits. Decatur. Deanna Koenigs is hoping to help more businesses and residents in the Decatur area realize the benefits of harvesting rainwater. Some of what can be done might seem like simple solutions, but Koenigs said they end up with lasting effects. She explained what was done to create a 3,000-gallon rainwater collection system at the Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Illinois office building, 310 West William Street. Many residents can add a smaller 50-gallon rain barrel system at their houses, she said. We don't want to waste good rainwater, said Koenigs, who works for Harmony Solutions Construction and Landscaping in Cisco, and teaches landscape design at Richland Community College. This is more beneficial than relying on city water. The water from Big Brother's Big Sister's building is collected to be used on a nearby Decatur is Growing Gardeners, or DIGG plot, Koenigs said. Excessive amounts can be trucked to other DIGG plots throughout the city, she said. It doesn't take up much to fill up the matching sets of barrels behind the building, said Jean Stahlheber, Big Brother's Big Sister's CEO. They do fill up quickly, Stahlheber said about the system that has been in place for nearly 2 years. We get a good rain, and they're full. The Big Brothers Big Sisters system was one of the project's participants on a Macon County MS4 workgroup tour saw in looking for ways to reduce stormwater pollution, particularly in urban areas. The work group includes the City of Decatur, Village of Mount Zion, Village of Forsyth, Macon County, and Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District. We're talking statewide about reducing stormwater pollutants, said Megan Baskerville, a district watershed specialist. You can do that with these practices. Other stops included seeing a new paver system at Scoville Zoo, urban rock garden at a residence, and permeable concrete at the University of Illinois Extension Office. Brandon Lott, with Farnsworth Group, said to consider various green options on construction projects, some of which are already being tried around central Illinois. Part of the idea is to reduce flooding, whether from various surfaces such as streets or parking lots, he said. It can, has, and will work in downstate Illinois, Lott said. A big part of the challenge is to understand how the systems work. He said grants are available to help with funding green projects. Part of the idea, Lott said, is to create filters before stormwater can reach the ground. Lott said new approaches to stormwater management are intended to protect, restore, or mimic the natural water cycle in order to benefit the environment. And from the most recent news, police seek teen vandals, Decatur. Police are searching for a group of teenage suspects they say overturned trash cans in the street, damaged Halloween yard decorations, wrapped a car in plastic wrap, and snapped off a traffic sign early Saturday in Decatur. Most of the vandalism was reported around 4 a.m. in an area stretching from West Grand and North Dennis Avenues to the 2000 block of West Leafland Avenue. And from Decatur, Emily Steele, staff writer, as numbers grow, breast cancer survivors face ongoing challenges. When Michelle Watts gets chemotherapy, she wears stilettos and a smile. They wait for me to come and see what kind of shoes I have on. I'm a heel person, she said. Watts is also one of more than 2.8 million breast cancer survivors in the United States. Watts, 46, is a single parent of two children who was diagnosed with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer September 18, 2014. People who don't have this, they try to empathize, Watts said, but it's hard for them to understand everything you're going through. Breast cancer is the second most common and second most fatal cancer in women. Since the late 1980s, more women have been surviving breast cancer. But the physical and mental scars from cancer linger for years after treatment, partnered with the looming fear of it returning. Survivors of all ages face a series of ongoing physical side effects, as well as emotional and financial challenges, long after the cancer was removed or destroyed. For others, the cancer may never go away completely. It's the idea of knowing you had cancer and that you feel vulnerable because it could come back or happen again to the side effects of treatment, said Dr. James Wade, founder of Cancer Care Specialists. The higher survival rates have been tied to increased surveillance through self-exams and screening schedules that have led to doctors finding cancers in their early stages when it's easier to treat. Treatments have also become more targeted for specific cancers, but depending on the type, the cancer can return a year or decades after a woman's diagnosis. Some of the most common side effects come from chemotherapy medications. Our chemotherapy treatments, as we learn more about them, have a lot of baggage, Wade said. He added that more targeted treatment has led to less chemo use compared to even a decade ago. The strong medication that kills cancer cells can cause nerve damage and loss of touch to slowing of the brain's ability to function, known as chemobrain. Besides the visible scars and hair loss, Watts had several lymph nodes removed during her mastectomies and has lymphedema as a result. The chemotherapy drug she was on can damage the heart, so she takes a medication for that, and her heart is monitored once a month. Nothing ever goes back to normal, she said. In her 76 years, Carol Stevenson of Carlock has raised 5 children and beaten cancer twice, in 1984 and 2007. The first time her youngest child was 6. Now she has 14 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren, and it's no secret in her family that she wears 2 prosthetic breasts. I'm grateful I was able to be there for my children, Stevenson said. In the past 30 years, she has seen resources for survivors improve. For example, it's easier to find prosthetics. She has few long-term side effects, including a lingering pain from the last surgery. And she reminds all her friends and family to get their mammograms. Follow-up appointments for cancer survivors occur periodically and less frequently the longer a woman has been cancer-free. Wade said the Cancer Care Center of Decatur helps a woman think long-term by creating survivorship plans. These serve as a guidebook for helping a survivor take control of factors that they can, such as exercise, nutrition, or sleep. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.